This is Fresh Air. Titles like Things Ain't What They Used to Be, Kinds of Blue, and Bodies and Soul are a pretty good clue to one of Al Young's passions, music. Each of those books is a collection of his memories which relate in some way to jazz, rhythm and blues, or rock. Young has been a singer and a guitarist. Now when he gets in front of an audience, it's to read or to teach. This semester he's a visiting professor at the University of Michigan, his alma mater. Teaching and readings have taken him around the world. He says his writer's voice is the product of contrasting influences, the North and the South, the city and the country. He grew up in Detroit and Mississippi. Al Young has a new collection of poems called Heaven, which brings together his work from the 50s through the 90s. This is the opening poem.
A dance for militant dilettantes. No one's going to read or take you seriously, a hip friend advises, until you start coming down on them like the black poet you truly are, and ink in lots of black in your poems. Soul is not enough. You need real color shining out of real skin, nappy, snaggly afro hair. Baby, grow up and dig on that. You got to learn to put in about stone black fists coming up against white jaws and red blood splashing down those fabled wine and urine-stained hallways. Black bombs blasting out real white estate, the sky itself black with what's to come, final holocaust, the settling up. Don't nobody want no nice nigger no more. These honkies, man, that put out these books and things, they want an angry splib, a furious nigra. They don't want no bourgeois woogie. They want them a militant nigger in a Fiji haircut, fresh out of some secret boot camp, with a bad book in one hand and a Molotov cocktail in the other, subject to turn up at one of their conferences or soirees and shake the shit out of them.
Al Young, how come you opened your new collection of poems with this particular poem?
Probably because the book is done largely in chronological order, and my first book, Dancing, appeared in 1969, in the very midst of the Black Rage era, when it was very marketable to be angry and black.
And you felt that not fitting quite into that category made you less saleable as a poet?
No. This was actually a commentary on the times. In other words, I was victimized as an artist by this particular commercial push.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make a little fun of it, and at the same time, just show everybody that this is not a hard thing to do.
Now, you have a more recent poem in your book called Your Basic Black Poet, in which you talk about people thinking that if you're not talking about race, if you're black and you're not talking about race in your poems, then you're not relevant.
That's right. It's a very sad situation. I'm categorically against typing, typecasting, or stereotyping of any kind, and we do this to each other in grandiose ways now with a little electronic help. And my interest now is more in how much we have in common rather than how we differ.
In that poem, Your Basic Black Poet, it says, well, if he was from Johannesburg, better yet, from Mozambique, or even from St. Martin's, it would be
right.
Easier to relate.
That's right.
Is that like the happening thing now, if you're black, to be African? Is that what you feel is the most marketable thing now, you know, in terms of literature?
Well, it helps if you're in North America. It helps not to be African-American. In the same way that it's against your interest to be Senegalese or from Martinique in France. In other words, at the center of whatever happened to be the colonial power, they're always interested in the exotics, the ones who come from somewhere else. In other words, these aren't our people that we have kicked around. These are people that somebody else has kicked around. You know, I have a poem about that in the book, as you probably noticed. It's called More Clues to the Blues.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in France, And I'm okay, I'm cool, because I'm from the States, and I'm from a place that produced wonderful James Baldwin and Richard Wright and Josephine Baker and jazz and all of that, so I'm cool. But if I'm one of their former colonized peoples, then I catch hell.
You've actually created an alter ego to take care of the expectations of,
That's right.
of what a black poet ought to be.
That's right.
Can you tell us about your alter ego?
Yes. His name is O'o Gbuga. O'o Gbuga comes from Ooga Booga. I don't know if that noun has made it into the Random House or the Webster's on a Bridge yet, but I remember when Hugh Masekela came to this country, he put out an album called The Americanization of Ooga Booga. And Ooga Booga, of course, goes back to Tarzan, Johnny Weissmuller, Republic Pictures, B-movie days, when we'd sit in theaters on 12th Street in Detroit and watch these so-called natives in loincloths and tiger skins with spears. They were actually from West Los Angeles, and a lot of them were musicians. It was called sidelining, and you actually got $75 a day for playing a native. But they would say things like, Ooga Booga, Mbawa Masa, this kind of thing. And Hugh Masekela once said that even though he grew up in Johannesburg in South Africa, he would see these Tarzan movies when he was a kid, and he thought that somewhere in Africa there were people who talked this way. So when he went to France, he and his expatriate African buddies would sit around the cafes, and they would carry on this Ooga Booga talk to blow the French away. So when he got here, he recorded the Americanization of Ooga Booga, and I heard it, and I said, that's it. O'o Gbuga.
Well, in your new book, Heaven, Collected Poems, you have a piece called Boogie with O'o Gbuga.
That's right.
Can you read an excerpt of that for us?
Yes. This comes to me as an introduction to Brother Gbuga and his way of looking at the world. It's sort of a biography. It's the kind of thing you'd see on the back of an album jacket. Boogie with O'o Gbuga. O'o Gbuga writes that he was, quote, born in a taxicab, right smack on 125th and Lenox in Harlem on Lincoln's birthday, 1945. Franklin Delano Watson was the name my poor brainwashed parents gave me, but I had that racist tag legally altered once I got old enough to see what was going down. The O-O, by the way, stands for our own, i.e. we need to do our own thing. Can you dig it? In addition to being one of our strongest young black revolutionary voices, Brother Gbuga is the author of half a dozen volumes, all of which have appeared since last year. Slaughter the Pig and Get Yourself Some Chitlins is the title of his most popular work, which is presently in its sixth big printing. Other volumes include Niggers with Knives, Black on Back, Love is a White Man's Snot Rag, and Taking Names and Kicking Asses. His plays, Transistor Willie and Latrine Lil, and Go All the Way Down and Come Up Shaken, a revolutionary black musical, received last month's Drama Authority Award. A militant advocate of the oral tradition, O'o Gbuga chooses to dictate his poems through me rather than write them down himself.
Oh, that's wonderful. My guest is Al Young, and he has a new collection of poems called Heaven. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Writer Al Young is my guest. He has a new collection of poems called Heaven. Okay, another poem I want you to read. And this is called By Heart. But before you read it, I want to say that a lot of your writing over the years has been influenced by music, particularly by jazz. And you have several books of kind of memories that have been sparked by listening to jazz records.
And, yes.
This is in part a music-related poem. In part, it gets to other, I think, interests of yours.
That's right. It's a nice way to put it, Terry. By heart. The leaves on the trees, the smell of the ocean, the feel of the earth. We sit embalmed in lonely clubs at night, remembering this, feeling sorry for ourselves, when all the time God is whispering and singing along the telephone wires of our secret hearts, telling us, I love you. Showing us how. And yet, we shut that soft voice out like the wind in a leaky cabin. We know all this by heart, but we forget until the singer makes the insides of us tremble like the leaves on the trees, Then suddenly we smell the ocean and feel the earth whirling around and around the worlds of lazy space between our thoughts.
That's really nice.
Thank you.
One of the things I like about that poem is it gets to three things that are in a lot of your poems: music, nature, mysticism.
Yes.
Kind of puts it all together. But it's so hard to capture what music does for you when it really connects.
Well, I think I can partially articulate it. I think music is very close to spirit in that neither is seeable. They're invisible forces that nevertheless have profound effects on us. I still doubt that we have even nicked the iceberg in terms of understanding what music is and how it affects us. And the same thing with our spirituality, which I use in a very loose sense. I'm not talking about theism of any kind or religion of any kind. I'm talking about human spirit, which is basically what we're made of.
Well, Al Young, there's another poem I want you to read. And this one is called January.
Oh, yes.
And I think a lot of people will relate to this poem.
January. The VW needs serious transmission work. The Datsun blows a radiator hose. Blue Cross wants $425 right away. The last checks of December come back bouncing off the wall at 8:50 a crack. The turntable quits spinning. Mildew overtakes the bathroom walls. There's $50 worth of developed pictures at Photomat you can't afford to pick up. The old typewriter is going to cost $30 to fix up so you can rent it out. You bite into an apple and hurt your molar on the stem, the same molar with root canal work done last January, and it's time to go in for a checkup. They're going to kick you out of the Screenwriters Guild if you don't pay the 2 years back dues. The city of Los Angeles owes all the money you spent in travel costs to do a gig way back in December, way back in November. The radio you bought your son for graduation fell apart, and it's cheaper to buy a new one than have his fixed. The Christmas briefcase your wife gave you, its handle slipped off already. Prospects keep growing colder as the water you're in grows hotter. You know it's January when you have to stop and pay close attention to what you're doing wrong that seemed oh so right last July.
That's great. When did you write it, and is there a story behind that one?
I actually wrote that during such a January, and everything that I was amazed when I read that. I've never read that poem aloud before. I'm amazed that all of these things actually came back, that I put all that down. That's literally what was on my mind in January of, I don't know, I think we're dealing here with the early 80s somewhere.
Let me ask you to read us a poem to close with.
Okay. A poem for Dylan Thomas. When night moved through the air of that almighty sleep, you stumbled. I dove fast to catch you falling there. Undreamed, the drowsing king of consonants. And in that mirrored state, the whole of Wales ignored, you dragged me down at once into your deep, bright, ringing countryside. There are no names for lines as yet unsung, that hang, that dangle scantly from the heart's tight, high-wired rope. Hope is what your songs stirred up in me. They left me with no choice. I went right on voicing all I'd heard and seen and breathed down there inside your dream, and mixed it well with wishes and bewitchments of my own. We probed all nights together, separately, and daylight was never so gentle as it was the medicinal afternoon you woke and slipped away to smell the sweet, brisk air, to swallow the sea, all small craft warnings be damned.
When did you write that?
1990.
And what was the occasion?
I was remembering Dylan Thomas and how much of a debt I owed to him, because when I was first getting seriously interested in writing poetry in the 1950s, Thomas's presence was everywhere. And he was touring American campuses and cities. I like to think restoring poetry to its natural place as a spoken phenomenon. And his voice, as you'll recall, was just so wonderful. It was so mellifluous and rich, sonorous, that I was touched by it and took a deep interest in his poetry, which I started to memorize, and realized that there was something to this more than met the ear or eye.
Al Young, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us and for reading some of your poems.
It's been an absolute pleasure, as always, Terry. Thank you.
Al Young's new collection of poems, Heaven, is published by Creative Arts Books.